Boker Tov, everybody. Erev Tov in Israel. All right, just before we start, I just want to thank the Berman family for their sponsorship of today's lecture. Dr. Matthew Berman. Hold on. I apologize. Give me 1 minute. Just want to get the name. Page closed on me. Sorry about that. Okay, in memory of Menachem Ephraim Aryeh ben Daniel, by his loving wife Estella, daughters Gabrielle and Naomi, and their grandchildren, Dr. Berman used to come to our medical ethics conferences for many years, and we wish the family to have happy occasions, smachot, and then the neshama shadam and aliyah, and we should celebrate good times together in good health. Okay, vakasha. Okay, Rabbi Liebtag, it's all yours.
All set. So today's the last class before Pesach, and last class before starting Pesach cleanup. So I want to try to put together not just our topic of Haggadah today, but also I want to tie it together to our series on King Cyrus to Lord Balfour. Even if you weren't in the series, you'd be able to follow the class today. But for those who've been in the class, we'll tie a couple loose ends together. So I have to begin by where we left off last week. I'll do a quick review of last week's share, and we'll get into today's share. Let me share my screen, and we'll get to work. Basically, before I forget, here we are. Here's the title. So we're going to re-examine our Mi Aved Avi and Magid in light of our study last week and of our study all year long. Meaning, if you remember the Mishnah, which we'll see again soon, the way we tell the story in Magid is by taking the verses of Mikra Bikurim, the declaration we make when we bring our first fruits, and we take it line by line and expound upon every single phrase. I want to try and suggest today my understanding of why that is what the Mishnah's conclusion is, and how it helps us understand this whole process of redemption and what Pesach means, not only in regard to the past, but also about the future. So I'm going to begin with a quick review of what we did last week. Last week, the title was, Who's the He of Ahisha Amda? Or basically, what's this promise of Ben Abtarim that we quote in Haggadah? And the underlying question, why are we thanking God for taking us out if he put us in? So we began with quoting the line we talked about a lot last week. We're thanking God for keeping his promise, his haftacha of Brit Ben Abtarim that we quote. And then we say that promise of Brit Ben Abtarim is what was not a one-time promise, it's an eternal promise. We talked about the idea of an eternal covenant between God and his people. And because of that, I can't start. We did a little poll and said, where should the story start from? And if I read Chumash in a cursory reading, you would think the story begins with Yosef and his brothers, or Yaakov going down to Egypt, or with the slavery beginning, maybe the burning bush. But to be true to the story from a historical perspective and also a thematic perspective, you have to begin with Avram Avinu, because before Avram even had children, God already told Avram Avinu, the nation that's going to begin and the children he's going to have and the family that's going to develop, before they become a nation, they have to go through suffering in someone else's land and redemption. Which means there's some deeper meaning to the Exodus story, more than just, oh, we got in trouble and God came and saved us. So that was our explanation why the story has to begin with Brit Ben Abtarim. What I want to show you today is the deep connection between Brit Ben Abtarim and Arami Aved Avi, or what's called Bikra Bikurim, the statement that we make, the declaration we make when we bring our first fruits. Now, we spent most of last week's share trying to understand what we do before Vihishamda. If you remember, I shared you that one page Haggadah. I hope you can still see it there on the screen. I think we talked about how the first column, the first seven paragraphs, which is the first hour of most people's seders, is a pregame show. And we really don't tell the story, but we talk about, we'll review what we did. We talk about, after getting the children's attention, we talk about why we're obligated. First, for children, because if it wasn't for the story, we'd still be slaves. That was a simple reason. And who's obligated? Not only children, even people who know the story. And we bring a proof story from the five rabbis in Bnei Brak. And we quoted one of their conversations, which we explained was key, because the reason we go crazy about this story once a year is to make sure that the daily mention of the story is meaningful, because it's a transformative understanding that's going to shape our behavior. That was our topic last week, if I remember correctly. Then we talked about how we tell the story, the four sons. Remember, we don't answer the question, we answer the child. And when we're obligated, Yochel Rosh Chodesh, and that's how the first column was all basically preparation for the story. But the story begins with Terach, not really with Terach, but God picking Avraham Avinu from a world of idol worship. And why God chose Avraham Avinu, not to become free, but to become a nation that will be in the service of God. To become a nation, you need a land. Therefore, God promises them a land. We need a heritage. We need a purpose. And of course, we're going to need a covenant. And the very first covenant that God made with Avraham Avinu that watches his history is going to be what we call Brit Ben Abtarim, that to become God's nation, we have to go through this, we call it basic training or suffering in Egypt. And that suffering is going to be create this collective memory that's going to shape our behavior in all the law sections of Chumash. So to start this week, I want to go back to the Mishnah as our springboard to understand our second topic now. Why does the Mishnah suggest that we use Mikra Bikurim to tell the story? So just to review the Mishnah in Arbei Pesachim in chapter 10, I think Daf Yomi is finishing up very soon, right? That's what we're doing now. So they pour the second cup, the kid asks the questions, and if the kid doesn't understand, the father teaches him how to tell the questions. Manishtana. Then, that's the four sons in Nagara. Basically, differential education. You tell the story based on the level of the child. And now gets our part. Matkil begnut mesayim b'shevach. We begin with something derogatory and then with praise. And then our point, v'doresh mi'armi aved avi. Here the Mishnah gives the guidelines how we tell the story from Arami aved avi until he finishes the entire parsha. Why we don't do exactly that, hopefully we'll get there by the end of the class. Before I get to the Arami aved avi, one little point about Matchil begnut mesayim b'shevach. But this is a format for how to tell the story. You begin with something derogatory and end with something praiseworthy. There's a famous machloket argument in the Talmud, exactly on this topic, between Rav and Shmuel. Do we begin with Avadim Ayinu or Mitchil of Avodah Zarah? You can understand that as an argument. That's how it's usually understood. I think it could also be understood as two examples of beginning a story with something derogatory and ending with praise. Because Avadim Ayinu, we'll see very soon, much more in detail, is something derogatory and ends with Shevach, that you know, God took us out of Egypt and gave us the land, and thanking him for that. And also, Mitchil of Avodah Zarah is a speech that Yeshua gives, and Yeshua's speech in chapter 24, in Yeshua, he also begins with Gnut. So it could be that Rav and Shmuel are just bringing examples of Matchil B'Gnut, of the starting with something derogatory, but they're not arguing over where to start the story. It could be they're just giving examples, or it could be something more fundamental. Does the story begin with Avraham Avinu? Our forefathers were first idol worshippers, which was the main topic of last week's share, why it has to begin with Avraham Avinu, or does it begin with Sefer Shemot with Avadim Ayinu? One last possibility is that it could be an argument what's considered more derogatory. The fact that we were once a slave, or the fact that we were idol worshippers, and all different possibilities that you can entertain. Now, what we're going to do now is understand why we start with Arami Aved Avi. Okay, I have to draw for the source sheet later on this website. I put the English translation for this. Now, what I want to point out, though, the Mishnah doesn't mention Brit Ben Abtarim. I want to show you that Arami Aved Avi is like saying Brit Ben Abtarim. I'll explain why in the shir. Now we have to get to work. That was all the introduction. Now we're going to get to work. To appreciate why we quote from Arami Aved Avi and why the Mishnah says Mikra Bikurim, we have to understand where is Arami Aved Avi in Sefer Dvarim. So I need to give a crash course in Sefer Dvarim just to understand how the book is built and what the main speech is in Dvarim. Because bringing your first fruits and making this yearly declaration is going to be the final commandment of Sefer Dvarim. I mean, of the speech in Sefer Dvarim. There's a speech that goes from chapter 5 to chapter 26, which is the main part. It's the bulk of Sefer Dvarim is this main speech. The first four chapters is an introduction to the speech. Why it's been 40 years? Because the laws that Moshe teaches in chapter 5 to 26 are the laws he received on Har Sinai together with the Ten Commandments. Moshe explains that in chapter 5. So basically in chapter 5 in the introduction, Moshe quotes the Ten Commandments. He talks about the covenant between God and his people at Har Sinai. And at that time, he received a set of laws together with the Ten Commandments that have to be taught over and over again. He taught them many times before, Sefer Dvarim will be recording the last time that Moshe teaches the laws that he got on Har Sinai in the first 40 days, together with the Ten Commandments. Then that set of laws that starts with Shema in chapter 6 and goes all the way to chapter 26 basically begins with the Shema and loving God and fearing God, and ends with Bikra Bikurim, with bringing your first fruits. But there's two main sections. There's what's called the mitzvah section, the commandment, meaning loving God and fearing God, like your attitude. And that begins in chapter 6 with Shema and ends with Vayim Shemoa, the two parts of Kriyat Shema that we're familiar with. And then the law section, the Chukim and Mishpatim, the detailed laws of how to become a nation serving God. Laws not just for individuals, but law for our national behavior, about the beginning with our national temple, our national center, Hamakom HaShiv Har Hashem. It's in chapter 12. And then we have our taxation system, our the laws of Masrot, the giving tithing, the Shemitah cycle, our economic system. Then we have our holidays, and we're going to have laws about slaves as well. Basically, it would be laws about a king, laws about a judicial system, laws about a Supreme Court, laws about going to war and things like that. Most of the laws from chapters 12 to 26 will not only be about how an individual represents God, but about how a nation represents God. That's in a nutshell Sefer Dvarim, where the last law in that section is going to be bringing your first fruits. Now, to appreciate the speech and how it begins and how it ends, we have to go back to covenant at Mount Sinai. I'll give a little advertisement, sort of, I guess I can do that. After Shavuot, we're going to start a series between, I'm sorry, after Pesach, we're going to start a series between Pesach and Shavuot about Mamad Har Sinai. And the title of the first class is Matan Torah, something we receive or something, an obligation we take upon ourselves. We're going to talk about this obligation that before we receive the Ten Commandments, or before we receive the Torah, we take upon ourselves an obligation to become God's people. But the main obligation we take is that we're going to be what's called a Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. If God will make us his treasured nation and Am Skula if we accept his covenant, and then we'll be a nation dedicated to serving. Now, keep that in mind, because in Moshe Rabbeinu's speech in chapter 5, it begins in chapter 5 and ends in chapter 26, he's going to follow the classic structure of every speech, where you begin with saying what you're going to say, and then you say, and then you end with saying what you said. So the introduction has to match the conclusion and explain what the speech is about. So the opening line of Moshe Rabbeinu's speech in chapter 5 is, Shema Yisrael, everyone listen up to these chukim mishpatim, these laws that I'm teaching you. And you have to teach these laws and keep them. And these laws are part of a brit that God made with us at Har Sinai. In light of that, he tells the Ten Commandments. Then he tells the story how he got the laws. When the laws are over, Moshe says, this day that he's been teaching 22 chapters of laws, these are chukim mishpatim that God gave them. And then God took upon him, we took upon ourselves that he'll be our God and we're going to follow his ways and keep his laws. And God took upon himself that we'll be his Am Skula, as he told us at Har Sinai. Just show you real quick the connection between them. We'll be an Am Skula, like he told us. Oh, we're not going to see that here. The Am Skula we had before in Har Sinai up above. And to keep all of his laws and to make us an Am Kadosh, but for God's glory and same and renown, and to be an Am Kadosh, like you said, just a quick summary, is that Sefer Dvarim is the main book in Chumash that has the key laws that are going to take the concept of being a nation serving God and applying them to how to become a nation serving God, not just individuals. And therefore, there'll be laws for a nation there. The final commandment in that speech, the final law, is going to be once a year you bring your first fruits and make this declaration. And now we'll see why we did all this. Let's clear the drawings and back to our source sheet. Okay. Now, what I want to show you is in Sefer Dvarim, this theme of the Exodus is going to come up. I mean, it's the theme of Exodus is all through Torah, especially in Sefer Shemot, but it's also very central in the speech in Sefer Dvarim. For example, the reason for Shabbat, as you say in Kiddush Friday night, for Shabbat and Sefer Dvarim, is not to remember creation, but appears to be to remember the Exodus. Remember we say Zecher Maaseh Bereishit and Zecher Yetzeat Mitzrayim. So the reason for Shabbat and Dvarim is different, but it focuses on the Exodus more than creation. The Avodim Ayinu, we're going to see that we sing at the Seder at the beginning, is going to be from Sefer Dvarim chapter 6. We'll take a quick look at it. But all through the law section, we're going to see over and over again that Chumash is going to use, especially Sefer Dvarim, is going to use this memory of the Exodus to guide our behavior. We began that topic last week. We'll see it again more in Sefer Dvarim. And I'll just give a quick example. In Sefer Dvarim, in chapter 24, it says, don't mistreat orphan or widow, and don't take the clothing when you take a loan. I'm sorry, don't take advantage of a stranger or a widow. And again, when you give a loan to a widow, make sure not to take a collateral, something she needs, followed by, remember you were a slave in Egypt. And we talked about how that memory of the Exodus will shape the behavior as God's people. And that's why God took you out. That's why God redeemed you from Egypt to do that. And the same thing in your field. When you gather your harvest in your field, make sure to leave over for the orphan, the stranger, and the widow, followed by, remember you were a slave in Egypt. Now, there's another point that Sefer Dvarim makes. We'll see that in chapter 10, when Moshe asks the question, what does God want from you? Just to love him, to fear him, etc. Here we see a description of God that makes it to Shmoneh Esrei in the beginning. Moshe says as follows, Ki Hashem Elokechem hu Elohe Elohim. Hashem, your God, the one you're working for, he's the God of all gods. He's above them all and the master of all masters. And this is a praise and description of God. Ha'el ha'gadol ha'gibor v'anora, this great and mighty Lord. Asher lo yisa panim v'lo yikach shochad, he doesn't play favorites and he doesn't take bribes. Ose mishpat yatom v'amana, what does God do? In our praise of God, how great he is, he does justice for the orphan and the widow. V'ohev ger, he loves the stranger, giving the stranger clothing and food. That's what God does. And then it says right afterwards, after it says that's what God does, then we have a command to us, we have to love the stranger because we were strangers in Egypt. Now, this seems to be a contradiction. On the one hand, it says you have to take care of the stranger, and then it says God takes care of the stranger. So the simple way to understand it, it's called imitato Deo. The way that God takes care of the strangers by giving us the opportunity or the ability to take care of them. And therefore, if someone takes their blessings from God, instead of saying thank you, wants to act thank you, if they help a person less fortunate, that's going to be the underlying message of our suffering in Egypt. We have to learn a lesson how we were mistreated as strangers and make sure not to do that to others and be more sensitive. Again, it was the same theme in Shmot and Vayikra. If you have time, you can look at these sources later on. Now, I want to explain in light of that, what's the last commandment of Sefer Dvarim? Let me do a quick mute here. Now, I want to give another example in Sefer Dvarim of this idea of how the memory of the Exodus is a key theme in Sefer Dvarim to explain the two reasons for Shabbat. I brought here two examples on the source sheet here. There's going to be another, how many examples? In Dvarim, wait, I have up here on top. In Dvarim, we're going to have, in chapter 15, we'll see them. We're going to go through all these examples now. In chapter 16, in chapter 24, we just saw. What I want to show you is if we're taking this memory, this phrase, remember you were a slave in Egypt, is always going to follow something that relates to sensitivity of others, I want to show you how it explains the two reasons for Shabbat between Shemot and Dvarim. So we're going to stop this share and go to a Chumash. If you have a Chumash with you, you can open up. We're going to share Sefer Dvarim. Again, chapter 26 will be Mikra Bikurim. We're going to go back, just a quick glance in chapter 15 about what happens when you free a slave. In chapter 15, what's it say? In verse 14, verse 12. Ki machelecha achicha ivri o ivriya v'avdecha sheish shanim. Should he have a Jewish slave, he had to work for 6 years. After 6 years, in the seventh year, you send him free. When you send him free, Don't send him empty-handed. Pasuk Yedaled. Hanik Taniklo. Make sure to give him a bonus from your wealth, from your sheep, and from your produce, and from your vineyard. As much as God blesses you, accordingly, give him a bonus when you send him free. Followed by, there's no doubt that this line is going to be a motivator to make sure you keep this one. We saw two examples before. Here's yet another one. Followed by, that's why God redeemed you, took you out of Egypt. Therefore, I'm commanding you this law. What Sefer Dvarim is doing, we saw it also last week in Parshat Mishpatim, in Shmot, when Sefer Dvarim, it's over and over again, using this phrase of remembering that you were a slave in Egypt to make sure you treat less fortunate people with sensitivity. Over and over again. That was in chapter 15. In chapter 16, we have the laws, all the national holidays. So we keep the month of the spring. We saw this last week. And bring Korban Pesach in the spring. We have all the Shlosh Regalim here. And you bring the Pesach on Makom HaShir Yivchar Hashem. Then this we quoted earlier in Magid. When you bring Korban Pesach, you can't have chametz with it. Instead, you eat matzah for 7 days, lechem oni, because God, you were rushed out of Egypt. Why did we go crazy once a year? Leman tizkor yom tzeitcha meretz mitzrayim kol yimei chayecha. To make sure you remember this day you left Egypt every day of your life. And we gave the example from Mother's Day last week, whether, even though every day is Mother's Day, once a year we celebrate to make sure that we remember it every day of the year. Same way we go crazy once a year keeping Passover to make sure we remember it properly every day of our life. And then it becomes this transformative memory. Now, it goes on, the rest of the laws of Passover. Then count 7 weeks to Shavuot and make a holiday for Shavuot. Then it says as follows. What do we do on Shavuot when we bring in our grain harvest? Who has to be happy on Shavuot? You and your children and your daughter and your servant and your maidservant and the Levite who's in your gates and the stranger and the orphan and the widow who's in your midst. So why not just say everybody? The way all the commentators explain, it's not that you have to be happy. You're happy because it's grain harvest season. But there's a lot of people who don't have harvest. They don't own land. Your servant and your maidservant. The Levite doesn't own land. The stranger, the orphan, the widow, they don't own land. Like in the story of Miguel at Ruth. And therefore, the way you say thank you is you share your happiness with those who don't have. And therefore, it's not that you have to be happy. You have to make others happy. The Rambam talks about this in the laws of Simchat Yom Tov. That the main law of being happy on Yom Tov is not making your tummy happy, but making other people happy, people less fortunate. That's Rambam in Hilchot Yom Tov, chapter 6. It's an important one, where he says, if your Yom Tov is only you and your buddies, and that's it, and you don't take care of the needy, he says, you're not making God happy, you're making your tummy happy, and your meal, you can take a look inside what he calls those kind of meals. Now, after giving this law, what do we find? Pasuk Yivet, v'zacharte ki ever ita be'eretz Mitzrayim. Remember, you were a slave in Egypt. What do we see again? That this phrase, remember your slaves, is going to be a motivator for the need to take care of the less fortunate people, the ger, the yatam, v'almanah, and to leave it in your midst. This memory, the exodus, is going to motivate that good behavior. Now, this concludes, see the end of the parsha. This is going to conclude the laws of Shavuot. You would think it said, remember God gave you the Torah. No. Remember, you were slave in Egypt, because that'll make sure that you keep Shavuot. When you thank God for your grain harvest, you'll keep it properly. And you have the same law by Sukkot about making others happy at the end of your fruit harvest. And that's the laws of the Shlosh Regalim. Now, in light of all that, I simply brought 4 or 5 examples where remembering you were slave in Egypt is going to be a motivator for sensitive behavior. And now you'll see something which will change the way you understand Kiddush on Friday night and what we say at Kiddush. If I go back to chapter 5 in Sefer Dvarim, I'm going to get to chapter 5. Back, here we go. Chapter 5, we have the Ten Commandments in the beginning of the speech. So let's look at chapter 5, Perakei in Sefer Dvarim. Moshe begins the speech. Moshe calls all of Israel together and says, Shema Yisrael, listen up to these laws I'm teaching you. Again, you have to learn them and keep them. And these laws are part of a covenant that God made with you at Har Sinai. It wasn't only with your parents, it was with you as well. And God spoke to you face to face, but I was the middleman, and then we quote the Ten Commandments. Afterwards, Moshe told the story about how you all got scared and you begged me to be the middleman. Now, in the middle of quoting the Ten Commandments, what do we find? It says, Shamor et yom ha-shabbat ha-kadsho, Shamor zachor, the famous drash on that, but it's the same idea. And then the main difference is not just zachor v'shamor, but rather the reason for Shabbat. Now, a lot of people think that the reason for Shabbat is to remember that God took you out of Egypt. But let's read carefully. Sheshit yamim tavod v'sitichom lachtecha, work 6 days a week. The seventh day is Shabbat l'Hashem Elokecha, don't do any work. Who can't do work? You and your children, and your servant, and your maidservant, and your animals who are working your fields, and the stranger in your midst. Why? Leman yanuach avdecha v'amadcha kamocha. Why do you need to take a day of rest? So that your workers have a day of rest. It's the same reason we saw in Parshat Mishpatim last week. The reason for Shabbat was Leman yanuach v'nefesh b'nematecha v'agir, so that your workers and the stranger also have a day of rest. Meaning, if you're working, even though you might be taking it easy that day, your workers also deserve a day of rest. And therefore, we have these laws that once a week, everyone deserves a day of rest. That's just landowners, even workers, and anyone in any social status needs a day of rest. Now, in other words, the reason for Shabbat is leman yanuach avdecha v'amadcha kamocha, followed by v'zacharta ki avadita be'eretz Mitzrayim. Remember, you were a slave in Egypt. That's not the reason to keep Shabbat. That's the motivator. All through Sefer Devarim, this is the first time it's being introduced in the Ten Commandments. But that's the reason why that's why this reason is given for Shabbat and Sefer Shemot, because it serves as an introduction to the whole set of laws that's going to take this theme and reinforce it over and over again. So here we have the first time where this phrase, remember you were a slave in Egypt, will be the motivator for Leman yanuach avdecha v'amadcha kamocha. So again, the reason for Shabbat, everyone deserves a day of rest. Followed by the motivator, remember you were a slave in Egypt. And now the grand finale. V'yotziyecha Hashem Alecha, Misham, God took you out of Egypt. Why? With Yad Chazaka. Alkein tzivcha Hashem Alecha lasot et yom ha-shabbat. That's the reason now for keeping Shabbat. If you understood why God took you out of Egypt and why it got involved in your history, that's why God gave you these laws. That's the main change between the Ten Commandments in Devarim and in Shemot. But as an introduction to the laws in Sefer Devarim, it makes sense why Moshe gives this reason now when he reviews the laws, because it'll serve as a good introduction to a theme that's going to recur throughout the book. So what I try to establish now is that when you read Sefer Devarim, over and over again, we're going to take this theme of remembering you were a slave in Egypt as a memory that's going to motivate your behavior. And that's why it relates again to the Shema, that when we say Shema every day, because Shema reminds us how we're in the service of God, saying Shema every day is going to remind us how to, not just the fact that we're serving God, but how to serve God. What we saw earlier in chapter 24, we didn't read the whole thing before, but when you're harvesting your field, remember, leave over for the Omer, for the less fortunate. The same thing with your olives, the same thing with your vineyard. Again, followed by, remember, you were a slave in Egypt, and therefore God's commanding you to keep these laws. And that's why, and earlier, that's why God took you out of Egypt, to keep these laws. So I think it's quite clear from Sefer Devarim, let me stop the share here. That's why I simply wanted to establish, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that this theme of redeeming our history and remembering that our slavery is so key to the way we behave as a people. If the laws that come with the Ten Commandments, these laws of the Ten Commandments are part of a contract between God and the people. And the goal, let me just do a quick mute here, 1 second. You have to mute, 1 second.
I did it already.
Okay. These commandments are basically part and parcel with the contract and the obligation we take at our Sinai to become his people. And because of that, we just left Egypt. We just got the Ten Commandments. We just agreed to be God's people. All through Moshe Rabbeinu's speech, which is his review of the laws that God gave him on the first 40 days on Har Sinai, Moshe's using this memory, the Exodus that they just went through, to shape our national behavior. Now, in light of that, I want to try to appreciate the final set of laws in Sefer Dvarim, in chapter 26. So let's go now to chapter 26. Let me just take a quick break and check the chat. Did I miss something? Chat. Okay, the sources are there. Okay. Okay, I'll get that later. Nissan. Okay. Minhag Eretz Yisrael. I know there's a, what do you call it? The Minhag Eretz Yisrael. Both Rav and Shmuel, I know there's different Haggadot in ancient times beginning, but those are introductions to the main story. Everyone follows the mission of Mikra Bikurim. Whether it's not a question of holding like Rav or Shmuel. I know there was many, what you put a highlight on in your Haggadah. But I don't think it's different Haggadot. I think there are different introductions. The main Magid, in fact, if you look in any law book, if you have limited time for the Seder, you just read Arami Avid Avi. We follow the Mishnah. Everything before Arami Avid Avi are introductory. So I can introduce with Rav or with Shmuel, but I'll give a different reason why we start with Avarim Ayinu, other than the Machloket Rav and Shmuel. Okay, why? If we have time, why no Pesach in the desert? I'll get to it at the end of this year. That's a Machloket, whether they kept Pesach in the desert. There's no Chag HaMatzot because there's no grain. Okay, when we say, Carol's question is very good. What we say in Kiddush, I think, is assuming we understand what the Shari just gave you. Shabbat is a day to remember not that he took us out of Egypt, but why he took us out of Egypt, which is our next point. In other words, remembering the Exodus is not remembering what happened, remembering why it happened, and how it affects your behavior. And that's the difference I explained last week. The Seder is not about gratitude, not only about gratitude, it's about purpose. And again, it goes to the core question in Judaism, am I thanking God for that I'm chosen or why I'm chosen? Am I thanking God for the responsibility to serve him, or I'm thanking God for the privilege of being better than everybody? I think what I'm trying to show you all through Chumash is that being chosen is not, it's about a responsibility, an obligation of serving God. And remembering the Exodus is remembering why God wanted us to have to go through that suffering to become his nation. He compared it to going through basic training, and how that memory has to shape our behavior, not only once a year, but every day of our life. And once a year, we have to recharge our batteries on that. I've said that probably 20 times, but in my opinion, it's the key educational point of the Seder. I'm trying to show you how, when you know the sources in Chumash for everything we quote at the Seder, it's under the hood of everything that we're doing. I call it Seder for the adults as opposed to for children. Now we do our main topic for today and try to understand why Mikra Bikurim is Brit Ben Aptarim. Let's go back to our source sheet and get to work. Okay, maybe I should read. We read just a quick review. In chapter 15 in Sefer Devarim, the first dialogue between God and Avraham Avinu we talked about, where God says, don't worry. God says, don't worry. I'll protect you. The first dialogue, and God says, and Avram thinks, not worried about children. God says, children, no problem. Okay. See the word Yerusha. And Avram believes that, counts the stars, how many children he'll have. And then God says, I took you out of Ur Kasdim to give you this land to inherit, the Rishta. And then Avram asks, when is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? How is he going to conquer and inherit the land? And God tells him, first do this little ceremony, making a cutting animals apart and walking between them. That was ancient way of a covenant. And then God tells Avram Avinu, what do you need to know? Remember Avram asked, Bama Ida, Ki Roshena? Bama Ida, this word Ida here, and Yodoa Teda. We made a big deal about that last week. In other words, that's connecting these 2 points together. Here's God's answer. The children, I promised you, are going to be strangers in someone else's land. To go through Inui, okay? Bavadum vinuotam, Avdut, slavery, Inui, affliction. Okay? And the whole process will be over 400 years. Then I'm going to punish the oppressor. And then they'll go out with great wealth. But it won't happen in your lifetime. It'll happen generations later. And on that day, Karat Hashem et Avram Brit Lemor, Zarchanatati et Haaretz Hazot. God makes a covenant to watch our history. And then we explained last week, this is not a one-time covenant, it's an eternal covenant. Got to watch our history forever. And this explains, if Korban Pesach is thanking God for keeping his part of the covenant of Brit Ben Abtarim, because it's a covenantal commitment, and keeping Korban Pesach is a sign that you recognize God's involvement in your covenant. If you don't bring Korban Pesach, that's why the consequence is your chayv karet. If you have an opportunity to show your allegiance to a covenant and you don't take that opportunity and you don't bring Korban Pesach, then the consequence is you're basically saying, I'm not part of that brit, which explains why Dafka Korban Pesach has a chayv karet if you don't bring it. Now, that's a review of Brit Ben Abtarim. Let's read now Mikra Bikurim. I'm going to compare this in a minute. I want to go back to a regular Chumash with English so people can look inside. Remember, we had 22 chapters of laws in Sefer Dvarim. And basically all kinds of laws about our day-to-day life in the land of Israel as a nation, primarily as a nation, but also as individuals. Now, at the very end, once a year, we have to make a declaration. What's it say? Vayaki tavola aretz, when you come to the land, which God's giving you to inherit, virishta, you'll possess the land, conquer the land, and dwell in it. The laws of Bikurim only apply once we're settled and have sovereignty. Then we're supposed to take from the first fruit of our land, which God's giving you, put it in a little basket, and bring it to the Beit HaMikdash, HaMakom HaShir Yivchar HaShem, the Shekin Shmo Sham, it's a place where God's name and reputation will be known. That's the key theme throughout all the laws in Devarim from chapter 12 through chapter 26. Now, the first thing you do, you come to the Kohen, and what do you tell him? You have something higadati. See the word lahagada? You have a statement to make. You don't say, thank you for the fruit. You say instead, what do you tell God? You're telling God, kibati ala aretz asher nishba Hashem lavotenu latet lanu. You're thanking God because you've come to land that God swore to give your forefathers. Now, where did God swear that? God swore that after the Akedah. I think I showed you last week that the Akedah, the Shua and the Akedah, is in all the themes of Brit Ben Abtarim. There's Koch V'Yashamayim, and there's Yerusha and things like that. If we have time, I'll show you that later inside. The Kohen takes the basket, and then you make the detailed proclamation. What do you say? You don't say thank you for the fruit. What do you say? You stand in front of God and you say, thank you for my history and thank you for watching my history. Or I'm going to show you now, thank you for fulfilling Brit Ben Abtarim. Why? I'll follow Rashbam and Ibn Ezra. Armi Aved Avi Imshat. Oved is an adjective. How they translated here? A wandering Aramean was my father. Okay. So the JPS translation has it like Ibn Ezra and Rashbam. My forefathers were wandering Arameans, meaning they did not have a land they could call home. They were strangers and some, they were nomadic people, and they ended up in Egypt. That fits the thing beautifully because now he's coming and saying, now I'm in a land I can call home. Way back, I didn't have a land I could call home. And we're thanking God for giving us nationhood and sovereignty. So we were once wandering Arameans and we ended up in Egypt. We were strangers there. Ger, remember, Yodot Tidaki Ger Yazarcha. We were strangers there, small in number. We became a great nation in someone else's land. Then they gave us a hard time. They gave us hard work. They made us the bad ones. We cried out to God, and God heard our cry. Okay? And then God took us out of Egypt, punishing our oppressors. With all these great miracles, took us out. And then he brought us to this land, the land flowing in milk and honey. And that's the end of the declaration, meaning I'm not thanking God for my fruit. I'm thanking God for his watching my history and giving me nationhood and making me his people. And now as a token of my appreciation, data, transition. Now I'm thanking God for my covenant and for watching my history and giving me a land for a purpose. And as a token of my appreciation, I'm giving something meaningful, giving my first fruit. If we have time, I'd show you how it goes back to Cain, fixing the sin of Cain in chapter 4 in Sefer Bereshit, about what you bring to God, what you bring to God. No, it's how do you understand your relationship with God and what you bring God. It's kind of brought me Priyadama, and here we're bringing me Rishi Priyadama. Now, It doesn't end here, though. Remember the Mishnah says, Atzof Kol HaParsha? We're thanking God, again, for this covenant. Listen to what we need to do in our thanks. Again, not just saying thank you, but acting thank you. You should rejoice in Yerushalayim with all your wealth and all your happiness, with everything God's given you. You, together with who? Ata ba'levi ba'ger asher b'kirbecha. Again, that underlying thing through Sefer Devarim. It's not you being happy, it's you making other people happy. The Levite doesn't own land. He can't bring Bikurim. The Ger doesn't own land. And therefore, when you're celebrating in Yerushalayim, make sure to take care of the Levite and the stranger because they don't have. Now, that's your commitment in Yerushalayim in the Beit HaMikdash as a member of a nation. Remember we talked about that there are two central points in Jewish life. There's the Beit HaMikdash, there's the community, the nation, and then there's the Jewish home. We talked about in Parshat HaChodesh, there's a Jewish home. That's different. We begin the first Rosh Chodesh Nisan was the Jewish home. The second Rosh Chodesh Nisan was the Mishkan. So here also, we make one declaration once a year in the Beit HaMikdash as a member of a community of a nation. And then we have our personal obligation to make sure our home obligations are done. And therefore, every 3 years, the year Maser Ani, Kitchalel Aser Kol Maser Tvotcha B'Shanah Shishit B'Shanat HaMaser, at the end of the third year cycle of giving Maser to the poor people, who do you have to give your Maser to? V'natata LaLevi, LaGer LeYatom V'Amana, V'Chu B'Sharecha V'Saveyu. You give what's called Maser Ani, the tithe to the poor. And you give it to those people less fortunate. And you have to declare that I've done my obligation. And you make another declaration, but now this you do from your home. And you followed, I've given everything to the Ger, the Levi, the Ger Yotom Ramana, as you commanded me, I think. And then I didn't eat it. I kept all the laws properly. Shamati b'kol Hashem Elohai, asitecho asher tzivani. I've kept Brit Sinai, I've listened to the voice of my God and his commandments. And then we ask God to bless the land that he's given our forefathers. There's about Chalav Udvash. Yeah. And then the speech ends. This is the grand finale of the speech. To make your sanam kadosh. That's already the finale, the conclusion. So what I do, I just lost the share screen. Now, I hope it's clear now that when you say Mikra Bikurim, you're not thanking God for your fruit. You're thanking God for watching your history. When I say Brit Ben Aptarim, let me just prove this now or support it with a little table. What do we see here? When you come to land, remember Vishta. What do we have? The word Yerusha? All through Brit Ben Aptarim. See the word Yerusha? Yerusha here, Yerusha, the Rishta, God gave you the land. I got to go out, that's the Rishta. Make a couple, let me get my little arrows coming up here. An arrow here, okay. We have Yerusha here, and Yerusha here, and Yerusha here. You can't miss that. Now, therefore, our chiyuv is only when we have Yerusha, because God promised Yerusha to Abraham. Now, here's the key point. Here's our next point. What happens? You make this statement. I come to the land that God promised my forefathers to give me. Now we say Arami Aved Avi. Look at all the stages. Arami Aved Avi. Okay. Where do we have that? In here. Bayagosham. Remember? What's it say? Ki ger yezaracha ber solehem. Bayagar. Okay. And they became a nation there. Vayot ha-mitzim vaya'anunu. They afflicted us. Vaynu lanu avodah kasha. Avodah kasha. Avodah is enough there. Avodah v'avdu. Where's that? Vavdu v'inuotam. Should be right over here. Vavadum v'inuotam. Here. And that's a perfect match with Inui and avodah. Okay. We cried out to God and God heard our cry. And he took us out of Egypt with the outstretched hand. V'gam atagui asher avodu dan anochi. Okay. And then you'll leave with great wealth. It won't happen in your lifetime. On that day, God made a brit with Avram to give him, promising him the land. Here's the land. Hope that proves my point. Now, I want to suggest the following. In theory, ideally, everyone should say this once a year in the Beit HaMikdash. If our situation was ideal, we'd be saying this every day. Once a year in the land of Israel, an ideal situation. Once we're in exile and the temple is destroyed, you can no longer fulfill this mitzvah bikurim. So you can't, we're potter. On the other hand, once a year, we have an obligation to tell the story of the Exodus at the Seder. We could do it freestyle. What does the Mishnah want us to do? The Mishnah, again, from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, that time period. I'm assuming the main Mishnah is already, the one we have, is from after the Korban. They prefer that we're going to use this this declaration of Mikra Bikurim as the core text to tell the story. What do we gain by that? In a backhanded way, we're fulfilling Mikra Bikurim without a Beit HaMikdash. I mean, ideally, we should say this once a year, because in essence, we're not thanking God for the land. We're thanking God for the covenantal commitment, and the land is part of that covenant. But that covenant begins with Brit Ben Abtarim and the story of the Exodus. So as far as the Exodus is concerned, I'm going to take the psukim from this declaration that relate to the Exodus and say them and use them as a skeleton text to tell the story of the of Magid. So that's my explanation for the Mishnah. Now we don't have too much time left. Let's go back to the Haggadah and see this inside. Let's go back to our share screen. And we did all this. Okay. We need another screen. Okay, let's go back to our one-page Haggadah. What did we do? So we saw last week how all this is a introduction. Okay, who's obligated, when we're obligated, why we're obligated, and how we're obligated, and why this story has to begin with Avraham Avinu and thanking God for the brit. And then we say that brit is eternal. We raise our cups and we make a big deal about that. Now, in paragraph 11 and in 12, that's when we begin to fulfill this obligation to tell the story through Aramei Avei Davi. What do we do? The first, we quote every pasuk. Let me highlight it here on the page. We quote Aramei Avei Davi. We quote this whole pasuk. We do drashot. Next pasuk, Vayirotenu Mitzvim Ve'anunu, right over here, and we bring drashot. Then we have Vanitzaka L'Hashem Elohei Avoteinu. Sorry, one second. We cried out to God, and then every phrase, we do a little drasha. God took us out of Egypt, Yad Chazakah, oopsie, and drasha on every. And I hope you understand the format. I hope you can see it. I'll make it bigger in a minute. I just want you to understand, that's the main section of Magid. And sometimes, if you might have noticed at some seders, by the time you get to this section, people are out of steam, and a lot of people don't even pay attention. And they just read it. They're in psukit, I call psukit azimra mode. And they're just going to finishing up because everyone's hungry. But the main law is this is the main section through which you tell the story. Now, what's the first drasha? The first drasha is a beautiful drasha in exile. Why? It's not pshat of the pasuk, because pshat is the way we saw the translation, the way Ibn Ezra and Rashbam say. Pshat of the pasuk is that we were wandering Armenians, because oved is an adjective. If I change the way I look at it, I can turn oved into a verb and say Arami is now the noun. And who's Arami? Arami is Lavan Arami, fits nicely. And he tried to destroy my father. Why? Remember, either he wanted to kill Yaakov or he wanted to get him to stay and not make Aliyah, to stay, you know, stay. He has a job, he has a family. He's trying to uproot the entire Jewish people. So the Medrash is saying, you know what? Sometimes enemies like Lavan are more dangerous than enemies like Pharaoh. Remember, Lavan wanted to uproot everything, and Paro only wanted to get rid of the males, meaning sometimes, I guess, assimilation is more dangerous than annihilation, in the sense that, you know, if you're in exile and you have a good job and things are, I don't want to be too Zionistic here, but you take the story of Lavan, had Lavan been able to convince Yaakov to stay in Haran, where he has family and has a job and has a future, instead of going back to his father in the land of Canaan, that would have uprooted the whole concept of the Jewish people. So as a message for the exile, a message for all future generations at the Seder, I'm going to do a beautiful drasha to say, don't only, you know, remember we have enemies like Pharaoh, also beware of enemies like Lavan. One way to read it. Okay? Then Vayer Mitzrayma, the next line, Anusa Pi Adibor, because when Yaakov went down, God told him, stay there. Remember, God told Yaakov when he went down, I'll go down with you, I'll bring you back, but you're going to die there and you're going to become a nation. The Kidlo Goy Gadol, Asim Hasham. God told Yaakov in the date of Sefer Bereshit in chapter 46. And then Vayagar Sham, okay, then we say Yaakov only went temporarily. No, only as a Lagor Bar Tzvan. It goes on, and we have all the drashot of all the psukim. Now, I want to show you one cute one. Bimtei Ma'at, here. Bimtei Ma'at. Again, from Sefer Devarim, that's the verses that follow. But we said before that God is Ohev the Ger, and you have to remember that you were Gerim, you have to love the stranger. That's the next line in Sefer Devarim, in case you want to look that up. Now, through this, we tell the story. The Egyptians made us the bad ones. We quote the Pasek. Let's try to Avaditachmalo. They said, you know, they're going to try and take over our country, therefore we're going to put them into slavery. Then we have the Inui. Here we're all quoting pretty much from Sefer Shemot. And we go on and on and on. And again, to do it properly, we have to spend an hour to do every drasha. The main thing I want to get across in the shir today is the mechanism that Haggadah uses to tell the story is taking every single phrase of Bikra Bikurim and doing a drasha of every phrase. Vanitzak, Vayishma, Vayat Yanenu. And the last drasha is on two psukim. God took us out of Egypt, Yad Chazakah, Bizronut. Yeah, we have a drasha of every single one of them. And then we do a second drasha, Davar Acher, second drasha in that same verse. Yad Chazakah is two words. Zronut Tuya, another two words. Moragado, another two words. Otot is one word, but it's in plural. Moftim, one word, but it's in plural. So it's two, five times two is 10. So that's a hint, a remiss to the 10 Makot, and we quote the 10 Makot. And then we talk about the 3-3-3. If you know how that's a class on the Makot, how they're organized into groups of three each. That's the mechanism we use to talk about the 10 plagues, and that's when the story's over with the 10 plagues, pretty much. And then we have a drasha after the 10 plagues that, oh, you think the plagues in Egypt was something? You should see what happened at the Dead Sea, at the Red Sea. And Rabbi Yossi says, you know, at the Red Sea, there was 50 makot, because it's five times more than we had in Egypt. We do a little limud at Spaniad. And then we talk about the multiplication tables, 400 makot, 40 makot and 50 makot, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Kiva, with the pasuk in Tehillim Ayin Chet. Basically, that's where we end the story with the makot. Now, remember we said we begin with Kunut and then with Shevach? We finish the story, and now we're sort of stuck because we finished the story with freedom. We're out of Egypt. Notice in our Haggadah, we don't bring the pasuk about coming to the land of Israel because in exile, we're not in the land of Israel. Some people in Israel nowadays add that last pasuk because according to the Mishnah, it seems like you should say at the end of the Parsha. Again, that ask your local rabbi whether you should add it or not. The other simple reason we don't add it because we're telling the story of the Exodus and I'm not finishing the story yet. But we do it in a different manner, and that's a Dayenu. In the last paragraph, we finish the story. We're about to say thank you. Remember, we dealt with Gnut and with Shevach. There's no greater Shevach than Hallel. But now we're going to qualify our Shevach, and we're going to say the following. Everyone knows the Dayenu prayer, our prayer song. Dayenu is simple. It's not so simple. It sounds like Dayenu means it would be enough, full stop, period, which doesn't make sense. It wouldn't have been enough if God only took us out of Egypt, or if he only split the sea, if he only gave us the mud. Had he only given us their money, that might have been enough. That's what some people say. I've never seen a question on, had he only given us their money, that would be enough. But all the other ones don't make any sense. But they make perfect sense. Why? We're not saying it would be enough, period. We're saying it would be enough to say Hallel. For only one stage, and I want to end with this because this is the whole point of our course we did this year on King Cyrus, Lord Balfour. Redemption is a process, not an event. And sometimes the redemption process takes a long time, and sometimes you're in that process and it's not complete. It's far from complete. The fact that a process is not complete doesn't mean there isn't room to say thank you. And there's a value in thanking God for even partial redemption. And what we're saying here, if God only saved us from Makat Bechorot, from the plague of the firstborn, I would say thank you. If he only split the sea, I'd say thank you. If he only gave us the man, I'd say thank you. Only Shabbat. Each stage of redemption is reason enough to say thank you. Then what do we then we say Alachat Kama Vakama? Even more so, I have to say thank you. Why? Because he did. Remember, first we have I abbreviated them all. First we say Ilu all those, dot dot. And then al achad kama v'kama, even more so, we say thank you, right? Because he did all 15 of these things, all the way till coming to the land of Israel and building the Beit HaMikdash. Now, remember I asked you last week, where should the story end? Does the story end with splitting in the Red Sea? That was the No Kippah Seder, freedom. Does it end at Har Sinai, the Kippah, the Black Yarmulke Seder? It was all about Matan Torah, or the Kippah Surga, the Zionistic Seder, ending with the land of Israel. Dayenu, in a backhanded way, covers the whole story. It takes us from Egypt and the 10 plagues and splitting of the sea to receiving the Torah, to the land of Israel, and to the Beit HaMikdash. So in many ways, we end with Shevach, like the Mishnah says, we start with Knut, end with Shevach, we're ending with praise, but we're qualifying our praise and saying, I would say thank you for one stage of redemption, even more so for all stages. If you ever have a question about whether you're high, whether it's okay to say hello and Yom Ha'atzmaut, even though the Jewish state is a nice state, but it's not total redemption. So based on Dayenu, there's no doubt you could say hello for the state of Israel. It's only one stage of redemption, but there's no doubt that if you would say thank you, even for getting close to Har Sinai or just splitting the sea and getting out of Egypt, even more so if I've returned to the land of Israel, even though things aren't complete. So if anyone was worried about making a bracha or saying hello, if you read Dayenu, you can say hello on Yom Ha'atzmaut. Now, as far as punctuating Dayenu, I punctuate Dayenu, dot, 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 not Dayenu, full stop, but Dayenu, lehodot, we say hello. Now, the next thing should be hello, but then we have Rabbi Gamliel, we have followed the Mishnah. The next Mishnah is that, which is a educational one. If I'm going to tell the story, I have to connect between the story I told and the mitzvot I'm keeping. If I just keep the ritual eating matzah because the rabbi said I have to eat a kezias, and eat more just because the rabbi said so, and don't understand the meaning and what it represents, if I don't understand lechem oni's conversation bread about the story of the Exodus, or lechem oni remind of the purpose of my affliction, what I learned from it, or lechem oni, a poor man's bread, to remember how to treat a poor person, remember the three reasons we get for lechem oni last week. So if I don't understand the meaning of the mitzvah, I didn't fulfill my obligation, either my obligation of telling the story, my obligation of eating matzah, pesach, matzah, maror. Ask your, look, it's a big machloket among the commentators. But the idea is, I'm going to quote that Mishnah from Rabbi Gamliel at the end of the Seder. And then, I guess we make our most fundamental statement at the end. What are we going to say? We do Rabbi Gamliel. And then we end with, every generation has to feel as though they went out of Egypt. Shenemar v'gata levincha. And then, not only did God take our forefathers of Egypt, we were all there. Even we were there, Shenemar v'otanu otzi misham. In other words, we have to feel like we went through the process. I want to end this year with the word Shenemar, meaning, I think we mentioned last week, this verse is quoted more than any other, this word is more than any other word in Haggadah. When it says Shenemar, we usually stop thinking and just read the verse. What Haggadah wants you to do is look up the source. Remember we said everything's coming from Sefer Devarim? I want to show you something which explains why we start our Seder with Avadim Hayinu, as well as Mitchila. Why? And how the idea that we have to tell our children not only then he saved us, but why he saved us. We're not just thanking God because he took us out of Egypt. We have to remember why he did it. Remember the speech in Sefer Devarim began in chapter 5 with the Ten Commandments and then with the Shema in chapter 6. If I look at, where's my source sheet? I'm missing a source sheet here. Devarim. I have to add one more source real quick. We need holidays. I'm sorry, I got to go back to Sefer Devarim. It'll take me a second. Magid sources. Simple. Here we go. Okay. In chapter 6 in Sefer Devarim, after the Shema, we have the famous question. If you were in Rabbi Zakshir, he brought this example in. Remember, Sefer Devarim began with Moshe telling the people, "Leave, keep these chukim and mishpatim that I'm commanding you today." So Moshe Rabbeinu is anticipating, should or when your children ask you the normal question, "Why do we have to keep all these laws? What's the purpose?" What do we answer our children? That's Avadim Ayinu. In other words, the answer in Chumash to why we're obligated to keep the entire Torah is Avad Imeinu. And that's why we answer the Manishtana with Avad Imeinu. We're going by Sefer Devarim. But Avad Imeinu is not the answer. It's the introduction to the answer. The question is, why keep the laws? The answer is at the bottom. The answer is, these laws are good for us. It's the right thing to do. We'll read this in a minute. But not only did God take us out of Egypt, just to take us out of Egypt, God took us out of Egypt for a purpose. Remember I said, it's not that he took us out, but why he took us out? Here's exactly why God took us out. What do we have to teach our children? What's our main educational message? When our children ask us, what's the purpose of all these laws? We answer them, you know what? It's not just I'm keeping laws to get schar. There's a purpose in our history. Tell your children, we were once slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. God took us out of Egypt with his outstretched hand. He did all these miracles in front of us. Remember, we have to say, that's what we learn from here, that as though we were there, because we're telling our children we were there. And then, Voltanu Hutsimi Sham, we just quoted that, didn't we? At the end? This is the text proof that, remember, Shenemar Voltanu Hutsimi Sham? This is text proof that every generation has said as though they went out of Egypt, because Moshe is telling the new generation in the 40th year, tell your children that you were there, but you weren't there. Most of the people, it's a new generation already. But you have to feel as though you were there. And therefore, it's collective plural, we're part of the Jewish people. We were all there as a nation. But why did God take us out of Egypt? In order to bring us to the land, but not just to bring us to the land, to bring us to the land to keep all these chukim for our own good, keep us alive. And it's the right thing to do because we're God's people. He takes care of us and we have to be dedicated to him. And therefore, the introduction to why we keep the mitzvot. We talked about last week, Vigat Levita, what did we tell your children? Daddy took you out or why he took you out? Here, but Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, you have to tell our children, like Ebenezer said, explain to your children the reason why God took me out of Egypt was in order to eat matzah. Explain to your children the reason why God took me out of Egypt was in order to eat, to keep mitzvot like eating matzah, Pesach and Maror. Remember that was Rashi and Ebenezer on the Pasuk. So what you see here is in Sefer Dvarim itself, in the introduction to all the mitzvot that follow the Ten Commandments that are the source of our covenant and our commitment to God, introducing all the laws, the first thing we explain to our children in our Jewish education is there's a purpose in our history and there's a goal in our history. And we're not just thanking God for what happened, we're thanking him for why it happened and understanding that I can learn from my history, I grow from my history, but there's a purpose to be his people, to keep his laws. And if God's going to give us the land and give us the Torah to be and be involved in our history, there'll be a purpose. Remember, we asked the question, where does this story end? With freedom, with the Torah or the land of Israel. Here we have all three, don't we? Avad Imeinu, God took us out of Egypt. But the outstretched hand, that was freedom. He took us out to give us the land of Israel, but in order to keep the laws of the Torah in the land of Israel, and that's the right thing to do. So all those three points of why God took us out of Egypt all come together on in the Avad Imeinu. Now, in my opinion, that's why Haggadah begins with Avad Imeinu. The reason we answer the Manishtan with Avad Imeinu is because we're pointing again to Sefer Devarim, and that's why we end the Haggadah with Votanu Tzimisham. So this is the beginning of Magid. Right here is the beginning of Magid, and this is the end of Magid. I think that's not intentional. That's part of the beauty of how the Seder works. So I'm going to stop here. And again, we talked about redemption. In the process of redemption, we talked about how what happened in the Second Temple period, which was partial redemption, fits very nicely to our original redemption from Egypt and also our future redemption, hopefully our redemption in our own time. Okay, I'll take questions. I know Benny's giving class in 10 minutes, so we have to finish up. So we have time for a couple. Yeah, just, Rabbi, any questions?
A couple of questions. I think you got them as you were going through the shiur, except no. You didn't end yet. Why no Pesach in the desert? That's a whole different question.
We don't know for sure, but there's no Chag HaMatzot. If there's no Pesach, because it's covenantal, and we broke our covenant. So the old generation is non-covenantal, so there's nothing to do. But basically, the 38 years is just a blank. It's like a, like, sort of that thing. But whether we kept Pesach for those 38 years doesn't...
I mean, the Gemara assumes not, but right.
Yeah, okay. It doesn't say anything about it.
Yeah. I just looking at Gershon's question. Avram asked by my dad, he is asking, like, all the four sons, a quotation that is Matchil b'Gnud u'Masayim b'Shevach. I'm not sure.
It could be, okay. That's a good way to look at it.
Okay. You're saying Rabban Shmuel, right? Avadim Ayinu is the intro to the Haggadah, not part of Magid. Yes, that I believe is what you're saying. Yes, Suri just mentioning, I'm doing it for you, unless you want it, right? The three covenantal experience, Gerud, Abdud, and Inui are in Lavan's house, right? Rabbi.
Oh, yeah,
Rabbi
that's Silver, a whole shirt. We
Rabbi Silver has the whole piece on that.
It's Haggadah. I mean, that's so Yosef, it could have been over with Yaakov. That's correct.
Yeah, Yaakov perhaps thought that was the key of Brit Ben Aptarim, and then it turned out to be not just him individually, but for the whole people. Yeah. Okay, I think that's it. Tova, okay, Toda Rabbi Shirim Nehadarim Me'ireinayim. Okay, Pesach Kasher V'Samech. I like to say Samech V'Kasher, but okay. Anyway.
I like to say that, unfortunately, we can't have Chag Kasher V'Samech because we can't bring Korban Pesach.
Yes.
Kalman, you say it like the Halig originer. That's what he would say. Would point out the difference by Purim. He would be.
Our family comes from the originer, the Chassidim. My grandfather Hoshatin. Okay, so we're gonna have to talk. We're related. Yeah. My grandfather, who I'm named after, actually passed away. Unfortunately, a very young man in 1936. He was a Rishoner Chassid, Hoshatan.
And Chardkiv.
You sing the regular the Kol Mekadesh, I assume you sing, right?
Yes.
Kol Mekadesh, right? I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the Rishoner. All right, we can talk afterwards. But okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Liebtag. Thank you. I guess it's 21 parts plus 2. We'll put it that way. And from Lord Balfour, and then we moved into Pesach. And as he alluded to, please God, after Pesach, we'll be beginning a series on Matan Torah, on the Chumash itself, the leading up to Matan Torah between Pesach and Shavuot.